Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes and Company with Poetry. Happy Friday, everybody. I hope you all had a great week so far. Hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Hey, Rex, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine. What's up?
Oh, you know, not much. It's Friday. Here we are again on another Friday night, you know. Yeah, hanging out and getting ready to have some, just having good company and reading some good poetry. We have a nice size board. I think we have like 19 pieces or so. I stopped counting, I think, around 8. And, yeah. So what's new with you? Anything?
Nope. Not a thing.
Don't sound so excited about it. Just saying.
Oh, no. It's all good. Weather's nice.
Is it? Good. I'm glad it's nice. It's a little chilly here, but I can – it's not – you know, terrible or anything. So that's always good. And, okay. Well, just so you know, I want to pick up Laurent. Hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Thank you, Jean. Good evening, Rex.
Hey, good evening, all. What's up?
Yeah.
What's up? Everything that's up is also down. So it meets in the middle. Everything is an even strength as well.
Here we go with the vicissitudes again. Right, Rex?
Oh, vicissitude. No, wait a second. This might.
What did I use on you the other day that got you all confused? What was that?
it was a take on, it was a spinoff of Vicissitudes.
I don't remember
the exact, because that's how confused I was. I had no idea. You went, yes, you got me good. Absolutely. So, yeah. So any of those Vicissitudes, what goes up must come down, you know, kind of like a hot air balloon. You know.
I got it. You're a vicissitudinal virgin.
Oh, I don't know about all that.
Well,
I don't know about
in the vicissitude context. Oh.
Sure. You know,
well, you're a mother. You're a mother.
Watch your mouth. Watch your mouth.
All right, you're a mommy. How's that?
That's much better. Actually, I've been called both, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, yeah, no, because when you say it, it's mommy dearest.
Yeah, that's me, mommy dearest. No wire hangers. That's what they say.
Oh.
Anyway, just kidding. Oh, my goodness, guys. I don't know. What a week. It's been a long, long week. And I'm not quite sure why, but it's a long week in my mind. Anyway, I can't get enough sleep. The cooler weather is here. I'm ready to hibernate. I would say wake me up in the spring, but, you know, some people would just let me be and let me sleep 365 days a year. That would be okay, too. Anyway.
Well, you got to get your ration of nuts and berries first. Then you can hibernate.
Well, I've met plenty of nuts. You know, as for berries, well, you know, one trip to the...
You follow the few berries.
What are you selling?
Twigs and berries, leave the lady mighty Mary. There's been some of that lately. Some of your sound.
Crash and burn?
Yeah. War.
Yeah, sadly so. Sadly so. It's pretty awful. So sick of the news. I'm so sick of all the terrible things going on. You know.
That's right. So we got poetry to fall back on, right?
Darn tootin'.
Okay.
Darn tootin'. So. Anywho, so. Is there anything we need to go through? Oh, Halloween's coming. Halloween is coming.
Yeah.
We're coming up on our 7th annual Halloween week celebration. Just want everybody to know, we forgot, because we did not. That would have almost rhymed if I had thought of that a little better. Anyway, yes, yes, yes. We have, I think, 5 contests up that I'm aware of. Probably because they all have my name on them. For anyone who's interested, we have 3 or 4 with ghosts, and I just put one up for the Art of Seduction for that week, and yes, and the Art of Seduction will be kicking off our Halloween week celebration, and then we will be moving down the line. Yes, we will. So, just a heads up, though, Halloween is coming. Come on, Rex, do the laugh again. Halloween is coming. There you go. That seems so much fuller when you did that in there. Yes, yes. Okay, here's what we have for the first piece for the evening. Rex, I'm going to have you read this one called Wanderers of Mystery by Ben Hart. And here we go.
Wanderers of Mystery. Oh, wait a minute. Did I get that wrong?
No. Wanderers of Mystery.
Okay. Wanderers of Mystery by Ben Hart. 8,580 days alive, and only now upon talking to God do I realize. In this place of us, it is questions absent an answer that I should ask, not question within mourning, as to not hold unto that want. But let it run. When October's gray necrosis suffers defeat at the hands of the moment, and the blue skies behind burn into gliding garden, gilded gardens of fireworks blasting. For as long as we have the breath in us to look into the wind and watch the new world flee from the old, and those wounds of iridescence become safe havens for daydreams to escape across a bleak canvas, frantic and hopeless, until it meets that blinding angel who sings in luminance. For the faces in the drift she cannot save from an eternity of life on earth. I see that you are God and I am man, and so it is. Or so we sing back to her in hopes she'll make of us something, anything beyond wanderers of mystery. And it moved me how much the escape of a daydream, like the collapse of a dandelion into a golden iris, looked like angels flying free, untethered, not in music, echoes of a falling sky, but in the quiet of my eyes and the reverie of their mooring into memory on the bright side of my mind. And Tom. All right, Laurent, what do you think on that one? It's a bit deep.
Well, his poems are always multifaceted. In the last stanza, and it moved me how much the escape of a daydream, like the collapse of a dandelion into a golden iris, looked like angels flying free. I'm not going to do the whole thing, but there seems to be a certain place in the mind where there is music, there's light, and the ability to tap into memories, in the quiet of my eyes and the reverie of their mooring into memory on the bright side of my mind. It's what keeps them going, I think. The bright memories that illuminate our past, because there's a part in the prayer in the second stanza. And watch the new world flee from old, and those wounds of iridescence become safe havens where daydreams escape across a bleak canvas, frantic and hopeless, until it meets that blinding angel who sings in luminescence. Once again, he's calling up a light. And when you daydream, of course, you kind of set your mind free. So, you know, there's memories, there's daydreaming, there's imagination. And it's when October's gray necrosis of his defeat at the hands of the moment, and the whole day brightens. It's very much, I think, about that light in his mind that he likes tapping into. That's my take on it. Well done, by the way.
Nice. Thank you, Mel. And Gene, how about you? You got to unmute first.
All right, hit her with a Eugene.
What do you want? Egg in your beer? You want me to unmute too? God, the nerve of some folks. God. Somebody heard me. The dog heard me. Anyway.
You're stalling.
No, I'm not. I have my comment already written. Thanks. It's a nicely penned piece by Ben. Great imagery, and it was really well done. I picked up on this stanza here. Down in his notes, he says, love, pain, depression, hurt, and rhyme. When I read this first line of the stanza, I went, wow. When October's gray necrosis suffers defeat at the hands of the moment, and the blue skies behind burn into gilded gardens of fireworks lasting for as long as we have the breath in us to look into the wind and watch the new world flee from old, and those wounds of iridescence become safe havens, a daydream's escape across a bleak canvas. There really is kind of a stark look at things. There's some a little bit of light woven into this, but I really see it as October's gray necrosis. That's pretty serial stuff. And I did say serial. Yes, I did. For daydreams. I'm sorry?
It is the necrotic weather report.
Well, necrotic is that's dead. I mean, it's dying and dead. So it definitely, you know, has a really sad and depressing undertone to it. And those wounds, okay. For daydreams escape across a bleak canvas, frantic and hopeless, until it meets that blinding angel who sings in luminescence or luminance. It's you know, you're looking for that something to make it better, you know, and it doesn't always happen. But for the faces in the drift, she cannot save from an eternity of life on earth. Yeah, there's, you know, just not everybody. You can't save everybody. It's just not going to work for everybody. But I think it was a well done piece, Ben, and thanks for sharing with us.
I think he hit on the name too, because he does hit that note up in the top stanza, 8,580 days alive, and only now upon talking to God do I realize in this place of us, it is questions asked and answered that I should ask, not question with hidden wanting, ask not hold on to that want, but let it run. The questioning of existence and as to what is unfolding. And what's unfolding comes in that second stanza, starting with October's grain of crosses, and the fireworks lasting for as long as we have the breath in us to look into the wind and watch the new world flee from old. He's pondering on the current situation and where it might lead, and knowing there's going to be a lot of unhappy souls at the end of the day, because, as you said, not everyone is going to get saved. And there's going to be a lot of death going on before something materializes out the back end, I guess. That want of wanting to understand, yes, you can't understand that which lurks within those who are predisposed to that which is going on. So, nicely done, Ben.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, Laurent, I have this next piece for you. It's called Floating in Immortality by Dan DeShino. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Floating in Immortality. I am the unknown, evaporated raindrop in a warming world. Those who once knew are in pages past in the continuous writing. The pen that bleeds ink to my daily story is hieroglyphs on faded paper that those around pretend to read. Even to know myself, now lost in translation, there is nothing to do but walk, as to be stagnant is to witness time crumble. To move is to flow with time and space, to flow with the winds of time, with it, within it. Scared of what stopping might bring, more scared of what is beyond horizon I might miss. There is no rest, only weary legs and splintered bones, and the lifetime of two onlookers, 1,000 lifetimes to me. My body stops and drags me to the ground. With last effort, last bone, not dust, I scribe into the rock on which I lay a simple name that once was me, but now has no more understanding than silence in a maddening courtroom. Time and space do not dance with death. They are but the music to which the dance is hypnotically propelled, and the rhythm is forever, the future, so far from where I stood, where humanity's beginnings as a child's tale, a theory based on a myth within fairy tale fancy. A being, a life, holds the rock which I carved upon death's gate and sees only the unknown scratchings in stone, the unknown, and I have immortality. End poem.
Great read along. Thank you. All right, Jane, you got first dibs.
Well, this is it was a nice piece. It was great read, Laurent. You know, I wanted to start up here at the top, but then I was kind of like drawn in by this. A lifetime of of Twinlookers, a thousand lifetimes to me, my body shops and drags me to the grounds. With last effort and last bone, not dust, I scribe into the rock on which I lay a simple name that was once me, but now has no more understanding than silence in a maddening courtroom. Time and space do not dance with death. They are but the music to which the dance is hypnotically propelled, and the rhythm is forever. Nice, you know, it's nice work, and it's got a lot of really great lines in it. And I really like what Dan did here. Just a really, what's the word I want, nicely expressed piece. I think that it has a lot of, I don't know, it's got a lot of feeling to it. And I like that. So excellent job, Dan. And thanks so much for sharing. Absolutely. I want to hear what the guys said.
All right, Laurent, you got to read. How about you?
Well, I get the sense in the first stanza of someone who writes and doesn't have much success at getting read. He says, "I am the unknown evaporated raindrop in a warming world." He's drying up. As soon as I'll be gone, without necessarily knowing his true self, even to know myself now lost in translation. And what translation is it? It's not a translation of language, it's a translation in time from one age to another age, perhaps. He says there's nothing to do but walk, as to be stagnant is to witness time crumble. The move is to flow with time and space. There's an interaction that he seems to be speaking about. And I don't know whether it's another dimension, or whether it's just the way the universe is created, but time and space are awkward things to handle. They fool you. He's scared if he stops moving that he might miss something, so he has to keep going. There's got to be something there. And to find, to identify himself, and he does when he writes, "With last effort and last bone, not dust, I strive into the rock on which I lay a simple name that once was me." But it doesn't have any understanding, perhaps, to anyone around. When he says, "A being, a life holds the rock which I carved upon death's gate," he sees only the unknown scratchings in stone, the unknown. That person has a name, which is unknown, but he has, the person who scratched it, the character of the poem, has the immortality that is given by his name being carved upon that rock. It's kind of an awkward comment on this, I understand, but it's, I think I'm not too far off the mark, but as usual, you're going to bail us out, right, Rex?
I don't know about that, but I'll try. I do like that note up front, "I am the unknown," that evaporated raindrop in a warming world, those who once knew are in pages past, meaning he lives, he's a part of that existence in the past, that unknown, and most of those are unknown because pages of the past in paper form don't really last. The pen that bleeds ink to my daily story, it's hieroglyphs on faded paper that those around pretend to read. Again, that note to misunderstanding, and now it's on that note of lost in translation. A lost language, a lost sense of self. But there was something right down near the bottom where humanity's beginnings as a child's tale, a theory based on a myth within fairy tale fantasy. Those stories we create to explain ourselves, yes, those are the ones that seem to latch on into because they can be easily translated tongue to tongue, so to speak, as opposed to those who lack the ability to read or write, I gather. And then it's from a being, a life, what once was, holds the rock which I carved upon death's gate and sees only the unknown, back again to that unknown entity, that person you don't know anything about except the name that's written on that stone. And you're left to ponder what of that life, because you have no real information guiding you to assess who and what the person was. So it kind of hits on that idea of you do get lost, and most people do get lost in time because they have no voice going forwards. And what of them in the past was there will stay there because there's nothing of them pushing them forward to the future. All right, Jean, now that I confused you, we're back to you.
Okie dokie. Why you think you confused me? That's okay. Whatever. Listen, I'm gonna put up the next piece by Darkened Auras. And Rex, I'm gonna have you bounce back and forth with this one for me. I'm gonna have you read the bold lines, and I'm gonna read the italics. So
the bold lines? Okay.
Yes, here we go. It's called "Forgive Me, Sweet Angel" by Darkened Auras.
Come on, hurry up. There you go. Materialize.
I don't see it.
Maybe I need to hit the button. There you go.
Ah, I thought it was me.
Me and the buttons, man, okay. I'll tell you.
"Forgive Me, Sweet Angel" by Darkened Auras. I was the yin to your yang. You were the light to my dark. Please, my sweet angel, remove my demon's mark.
You thought we were balanced, love. Our passion ignited so swell. When you sent me to heaven, I sent you straight to hell.
I couldn't control my actions. My brain was on fire. Wanted you all to myself. You were my only desire.
I watched you panic after realizing my fate. Heard the guilt in your voice once you killed your mate.
Then please just forgive me. I never meant to get violent.
A tear fell from his cheek as he knelt before her, silent. She shimmered so sparkling, cast on him her light. I cut ties, you're forgiven, she said, walking into the night. End poem.
Mm-hmm. Nicely read there, Jean. Thank you. All right, Laurent, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, I thought you guys gave that a pretty good read. A poem asking forgiveness. I was the yin to your yang. You were the light to my dark. Please, my sweet angel, remove my demon's mark. And as it turns out, the balance that he thought they had was enough to send her to heaven and him to hell. And I couldn't control my actions. My brain was on fire. He did something, perhaps a little too forward. Because when your brain is on fire and you can't control yourself, you better do something stupid. She realizes that, watching him panic, and somehow he got violent. And you know what? When you get violent with a woman, that's usually the end of it. I cut ties. You're forgiven, she said, walking in the night. She forgives him, but by the same token, he's out of there. I thought it was well handled by Darkened Auras.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Laurent. All right, Jean.
I thought this was a good piece. I assume she wrote it by herself, which makes it even better, because sometimes it's hard to swap characters throughout. You know, sometimes it's not. But, you know, you thought we were balanced, love. Our passion ignited so swell. When you sent me to heaven, I sent you straight to hell. I couldn't control my actions. My brain was on fire. I wanted you all to myself. You're my only desire. You know, I think she really said it well. And I think that she explained it nicely in the second, third, and fourth stanza. So just on that alone, I think, you know, Darkened Auras, you did a great job with this. And this was written for Arcana's show. Very cool. Very cool. And I blew it at the end there because I didn't realize there was a part for a narration. And that's what the bottom of this all was. But nicely done, Christina. And thanks for sharing with us. Yeah. Nice job. Yeah.
Yeah, I think those two sentence stanzas were the control for the whole thing. I couldn't control my action. My brain's on fire. I want you all to myself. You're my only desire. I watched you panic after realizing my fate. Heard the guilt in your voice once you killed your mate. The idea of being that yin and yang motif, and all of a sudden, one just goes off the deep end. And this is, you, it does offer up that yin and yang moment, and that thought to forgiveness on the back end also. I cut ties, you're forgiven, she said, walking into the night. Again, he's still lonely in that moment, might be forgiven, but the guilt still lingers because he gave up the best side of himself, or let the worst side of himself reveal itself to the point where he takes care of the best side and sends her off to a better place while he gets to walk in the darkness. Nicely done, Christina. Thank you.
Absolutely.
All right, Gene. That one coming back your way.
Okay, I got to hit a button. Oh, God. Me and my buttons. Okie dokie. Laurent, and I'm coming to you for the next read. And this is Felicity's Song by Cedar Chapman. And no, I have not put it in the room yet. Here we go. There goes. Whenever you're ready.
Felicity's Song. You still sing when the graveyard is silent and tombstones grow around you like black orchards. Under the blue moonlight, I sleep beside you, dance alongside your shadow. Press your pale purple lips on mine. On those icy nights when I tremble, my eyes shut, and my jaw clenches, molars rattle, your silver hair dangles over my face like an abandoned silk web. You're a ghost weaved in the wind, where smiles blur and candles pop between the living and the dying, remembering then fading. I lie alone, waiting to join you. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, this walks right up your bailiwick. What do you think?
You know, I like this piece by Cedar. At first, I was like, oh, you still sing when the graveyard is silent and tombstones grow around you like black orchards. You know, I was kind of like, okay, where's this going? But here it gives into something more. Under the blue moonlight, I sleep beside you, dance alongside your shadow, press your pale purple lips upon mine. You know, there's a lot here, but then it goes, you're a ghost weaved in the wind, where smiles blur and candles trot between the living and the dying, remembering then fading. I lie alone waiting to join you. It's such a, there's a sadness, you know, a loss. And, you know, it's a loss that someone hasn't gotten past yet. You know, I'd rather just not go on than to live without you, kind of a feel to it. And I think that it was well done by Cedar. I mean, I like Cedar's work anyway. And this is one of his, it's a different piece that I've seen in him, because I don't usually see anything that has a ghostly or a, you know, a haunted or a, you know, scary kind of a thing to it. So this is a nice piece, and I think that he handled it really well. So thank you so much, Cedar, for sharing with us tonight. I really appreciate that. Great piece.
Nice. And you got to read. How about you, Lamont?
Well, I'm going to make the assumption that we have someone who's so at such a great stage of loss that he's taken to sleeping in a graveyard at the tomb of his beloved. And he tells her story through his story. When he says, you still sing when the graveyard is silent, the graveyard is silent, but he can hear her. He's sleeping there beside her, imagining her pale purple lips on his. He sees her clearly enough that the silver hair dangles over the face like an abandoned silk web, which is a nice phrasing. And in the last stanza, of course, he admits to the fact that she is a ghost, not an actual ghost, I think, but something conjured up in his mind, because he is just simply waiting to die so that he can join her. Now, that's all very melodramatic, but it's really done in an elegant way that is absolutely enjoyable. Great write, Cedar.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. The contrast in this is stark and revealing. It's got that nice, a nice note to a Victorian feel to it, something you might find in a Dracula story along those lines. Because it does walk in that note of love. You hear it, you still sing. And I sleep beside you, dance alongside your shadow, place your pale purple lips upon mine. And then that really dark, not even dark, but just a little dark, on those icy nights when I tremble, my eyes shut, and my jaw clenches and molars rattle, your silver hair dangles over my face like an abandoned silk web. And at that notation, as Ross hit on the conjuration of mind in the moment, he is waiting for his moment, his time to pass, so that he can cross over and spend the next whatever it is with her on the other side. So, nicely done, Cedar.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Scout's World by Stellina, and I have an audio for this one. So here, well, maybe I better not rush into that. I better find it first. No. Let me hear this.
Skye Finch beckoned me into her yard at a tender age, since when we have remained the very best of friends. I often call on her and Brother Jem to sit a while on the porch, surveying all the neighborhood where intrigue never ends. I saw and learned so much through her inquisitive child's eyes about life, love of family, and respect for fellow man, sharing with me Father Atticus's deeds and words so wise, to walk inside another's skin, to help others whenever you can. No prejudice reigned inside her heart, so full of innocence. No differences between black and white existed in her mind. All men were equal in that utopian world in which she dwelt, where she could never comprehend how others could be unkind. From her world I learned how prejudice can poison the soul and spread like a rabid disease from one to another. Her willing ways to help poor Boo to free him from cruel rumors. All these things taught me to consider everyone like a brother. Each page of her story filled me with joy and pleasure, and all my life this book has remained for me a true treasure.
Great read, Selena. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Ron, why don't we kick it off with you, please?
Yeah, when it started, I missed like the first line. I didn't hear it at all. So as I began listening to the lines, I often call on her and Brother Gene to sit a while on the porch, surveying all the neighborhood where intrigue never ends. And she continued to read, and I'm sitting there thinking, this feels so familiar. It sounds so familiar. And in my head, I was going through some of our Southern authors, trying to decide which one it was. And then I saw, and I wasn't on the page. All right, I was still on the live phone. So when I came in and clicked on Selena's link and saw Harper Lee to Kill a Mockingbird, it made perfect sense. And I was just amazed at how she has managed to fit her poem really right into the style of the book and other writings as well. I thought it was really well done, and it had that same kind of rolling introspection, that interesting way of expressing herself when sentences don't end and they just continue. I think what we have here are stanzas which are all one sentence, which is interesting. I like that a great deal. This is a fine, fine work and a great tribute to Kill a Mockingbird. I mean, the book welcomed her at an early age. And she says, of course, Scout Finch beckoned me into her yard at a tender age. Well, that's a metaphor for to begin reading it. And that book has remained a steadfast friend to her all her life, so much so that she often rereads, which is, when you got a great book, that's a bit to do. Bravo.
Excellent. Thank you, Lamont. And Jean, how about you?
I knew it. I think this was a wonderful piece.
You were again, weren't you?
I'll never tell.
Money.
Definitely a wonderful, wonderful write by Stelena. You know, I think I picked it up at the second stanza. Yes, I did. The second stanza, and I took it all the way down to the last full stanza. There was so much in it, and it was so well expressed to the readers, to the listeners. Everything that she had in her head. I mean, she just wrote it beautifully. I thought there were great stanzas throughout. I loved the thoughts that she very so very well expressed. Excellent write and a fabulous audio. Thank you, Stelena. I really enjoyed this piece. Wonderful.
All right. Yes, this was well read. And picking up that book at an early age and then delving into it, and then on the back end of this, delving herself further into it, I saw and learned so much through her inquisitive child's life about life, love of family, respect for fellow man, sharing with me father attitudes and deeds and words so wise to walk inside another's skin to help others whenever you can. And then the thought of the tender years with no prejudice reign. And then from her world, I learned how prejudice can poison the soul. And the question notes that I come as Scout being the easy one to ask because she is a child, and the only way to get answers is to ask the questions, even if they become difficult in the moment. And then the last stanza, each page of the story filled me with joy and pleasure, and all my life this book has remained for me a true treasure. A note to that first book that really spoke to you in the moment, and you held it as something that still beats within your heart all these years later. So, nicely done, Stelena.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Jokey, here we go. We're going to go on to the next piece. It's called A Letter to My Friend by Silvana Five. And I have an audio for this one. So, let me... Here it is. Okay, here goes.
A Letter to My Friend. My friend, each morning we visit myself and the big sea. I, to bring hope, wrapped up in a smile. It, anguish and suffering. A wolf in sheep's clothing, its chilly, icy fingers invading the mind and body. Each of us players in the same game with different goals. I to support, it showing no mercy. Yes, cancer has power, but it cannot take away your day-by-day strength or the love of others around you who watch you fight your battle with unfailing courage. It may go on its egotistic journey, eagerly searching its next victim, but you will never quench the spirit of human endurance or the power of love. You amaze me, my friend. My heart warms with the gift you have given me, of meeting each day with gratitude and to never give up. Thank you.
Great read, Silvana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It's very much appreciated. And Jean, start with you, please.
I think that this was a beautiful piece dedicated in a tribute to her friend, Barbara. I think it was just very well done. My friend, each morning we visit myself in the big sea, I to bring hope wrapped up in a smile. It anguish and suffering, a wolf in sheep's clothing, its chilly, icy fingers invading the mind and body. Each of us players in the same game with different goals. I don't know, I just think that it was so well written because it was, well, it's a letter to a friend, let's be real. I guess that was kind of stupid for me to even say. You know, she's writing to her friend and going through the different emotions and thoughts going through her head, and I think that she did it beautifully. And what a lovely gift, you know, to her friend. And I think that that's what makes it so good, you know. So nice job, Savannah, and thank you so much for sharing with us. Absolutely. Wonderful job.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Yeah, she describes Barbara as her dearest friend. You know, when you lose your best friend, a person that you might talk to daily, who understands every little bit of you and you, them, and that person dies, it's really like losing a mate, a husband or a wife. And in a totally different way, because you'll tell things to your best friend you would never tell, or perhaps hesitate to tell your mate. You have to live with them after all. And she expresses it really well in this particular poem, because she represents the strength that's necessary to be there to allow the other person a little bit of strength, some understanding, just to commiserate them. And be real and be there for them. It's beautifully written and completely heartfelt. There's no doubt about that. And I can imagine the pain that she had to feel, because it's quite evident in this fine poem that she wrote.
Absolutely. That note, the first part of this, the visit myself in the big sea, I bring hope. Wrapped up in a smile, it, anguish and suffering, a wolf in sheep's clothing, its chilly, icy fingers invade the mind and body. Each of us, players in the same game with different goals, I to support, it, showing no mercy. Cancer has power. And then that's that one line right below there. But it cannot take away your day-by-day strength. So what Savannah's offering up here is the fact that even with this struggle and the heartache that's rolling into this, and the pain she often obviously feels, she's being shown grace by someone who is still enjoying what life there is before her passing, and that kind of equates to a sense of peace between the two, that they can enjoy each other's company without the harbinger weighing heavily upon their shoulders. And that note to Grace has, by the note of thank you at the bottom, has been transferred forward, so to speak. So, I think that's Silvana.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Okay, Rex, I have the next... Oh, that's not you. Wait a minute. I have the next one for you. I have to get it again. Okay, dokie. Here goes. And whenever you're ready.
All right. Lyric of Lucy Lilac, number 4, White Jack Blue. The cool enchanted mist hugging mountains green turns blue as eagles twist around the clouds of Jean. Ancient shadows roam through the bluish trees under fallen angel dome till holy demons freeze. Stars are coming too when apricot infinity brightens all the blue invisibly or stealthily. So every merry maid will be dreaming well in a huckleberry shade, a ring tomorrow's bell, or to ring tomorrow's bell. And pause. And well, why don't we kick that with you, unless you want to go first. Since,
I think Jean should go first. I like it when she goes first.
Thanks. Throw me under the bus. It's okay.
I'm driving the bus. I'm driving it.
You're driving the bus? Hi, buddy.
That's great.
Get your seatbelt on.
And he's not going to miss one tread track across your body.
Oh, my God. Boy, oh, boy, what a crowd. Friends like you, who needs enemies? Anyway.
Frenemies.
Frenemies, there you go. Lyric of Lucy Lilac. The cool enchantment mist hugging mountains green turns blue as eagles twist around the clouds of Jean. It kind of caught my eye. I was like, did he say my name? And I thought it was like, okay. I thought it caught my attention. I don't know about anybody else's, but it caught mine. I like Jack Blue's work because it always has, as I always say, it kind of has this fairy quality about it. It's always some kind of a lighthearted thing in my mind, you know, because he usually speaks of surroundings that are, I don't know, otherworldly. I don't know if that's really the right way to say it. But I always find it to be intriguing. You know, ancient shadows roam through the bluish trees under fallen angels' dome to holy demons' freeze. And there's that imagery that I was kind of talking about. You know, you get into the landscape of the poem, and it always has like this neat quality about it. You know, bluish trees, you know, shadows roam. You know, I don't know. I just think it's kind of always intriguing to me. I think it's always lighthearted. So every Murray Maid dreaming well in a huckleberry shade to ring tomorrow's bell. I don't know. I think that it's just lightheartedness and nice brevity. And there's some nice lines all the way throughout. So, you know, nice work, Jack, and thank you so much. And I do mean Luke. I appreciate it very much. And nice. And this is inspired by a poem by Garden Delights, which I always find is neat when he does that. So great piece, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jane. All right, Laurent, how about you?
Well, there's nothing that says a poem has to have a message. And these lyrics are just that. They're as Jeeves said, they're lighthearted lyrics. They offer imagery. And that really is their reason for existence, I think. It's just fun imagery. I mean, I don't know what kind of sense you can draw from ancient shadows roam through the bluish trees under fallen angels' dome until a holy demon's freeze. I mean, you could possibly stretch something together. I think it would be a big reach. I think they just exist as lyrical imagery using color. And not quite nonsense poetry. It's a little too elegant for that. It seems to want to make sense because it reads well and it's got great flow, but I'm not finding any particular overall message, just an expression of wordplay, I guess.
All right. Thank you, Ron. Well, this kind of hits on note about a little bit mystical, but it also talks of a forest on a mountainside. So you look at mountain forest, you're thinking of you've got some blue-green trees, you've got greenery, you've got plenty of things to walk within. And he walks in that note of hugging mountains green, turns blue as eagles twist around the clouds of Jean. So Jean, the one on the mountain, so to speak, ancient shadows, and calls forth the idea of how long that fortress of forest has been there, what it's seen, what it's felt, and what it's emitted from itself. So the demon trees could be anything that lurks within the darkness, so to speak. And the stars coming true. I like that. When apricot infinity brightens all the blue, invisibly or stealthily. A note to a little bit of clarity. You get that note of, what was it, red skies at night, sailor's delight, red skies in the morning, sailor take warning, so to speak. And then the back end kind of hits on the idea of a dream. So every merry maid will be dreaming well in a huckleberry shade to ring tomorrow's bell. The idea of you start with the blue and you end up with a nice note of, and you go through the apricot angle and you walk right into the huckleberry shade of perfect evening, which is a nice touch. Thank you, Jack.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, Laurent, that's going to bring me to you for the next piece, and this is called Brew of the Warlock by Francisco Del Mar. So whenever you're ready.
All righty. Oh, that may take a while. All right. Brew of the Warlock. Let me gird my loins. A yearly Yule before the Lackenstein glasses. A yearly Yule before the fourth Yule be tided upon a full moon as the Saxons gathered at the Sith where Yoster many worshipped and the maidens that wedded in Aisling. Tales of cedar kept alive in the elders and the maidens bathed and lathered, frolicking the elves and the dwarves, as kinsmen drank mead with a stripling. But the glee of the Saxons writhed anew with the fiend of a grewer who wrought a need, as a heen warlock came upon the thorps, and with a brew he wielded the kingdom. Upon a morning, as a folk brooked in frith, a shrewd being took the orlay out of greed, as a warlock with a guise of a man came, near maidens delivering within swiftdom. One maiden did not overcome his spell, falling swiftly under his wearisome gleek, a manst and doomed to roam the brine and to wail as a widow amidst the gales. The tale spoke of a Selkuth brew drank by a maiden from a kith old and meek, and her shrill wails arise the swales with the men found hardened in dales. A flirt of a warlock, walled Saxons, Jutes, Angles, and Frisians who sought freedom, as the Aethelings did not bow before him, when the Helleth came upon the strands. He came to end the brewer of the warlock, freeing the maiden from her thraldom, and born a son of a free man and a waif, gathered, wraithed with the skill of the god's hands. Folk said that he on came beyond the swire, and blessed with a swear brawn of Timor, riding unto the tomb slayed of Tors ahead in the moorland where he found the fifth. As his horse began to drink from a water, he felt he stood by a white looking sooner, and seeing that his horse became stone, he heard the grisly wails from the earth. From the water came a guise of a fiend, staring into his leery eyes, standing high, within sparkling waters lapped in blood, and a body flew in the wind following her. He stopped before the rink beswitten. Off his strength waned in the hall nigh, yet a mane within his means ordered eft, their furtherance and shrieks upon the wear. With a dwimmer he blinded the white, and she became herself stone of fright, as a blick of the mean ended the curse, where a fiend became a woman afresh. And she spoke of the harsh qualm of the ear, by a heenling she wended upon that night, as on his steed he rode on to the kingdom, with his sword slewing him upon an ersh. The maiden became queen of the Saxons, with her daring swain Rixling as the king, and a tale of a brew of a warlock she told, to who durst to wade waters of the tide. The Saxons harried the mean of a Y, and a cedar of the gods kept in a ring. With their est found in the mead brink, in horns of elders, and a teeming wine. End poem.
Great reading aloud. And I didn't have to do it this time. Thank you, Dean.
Yeah.
Not that
yeah.
Perfect. Thank you very much. All right, Gene. Since you got run over by the bus, I guess you threw back the old boom at the off end, didn't you?
Not me.
What do you think?
You know, I thought it was a nicely. No, it was just luck. Let me just tell you, it was just luck. They call it karma. Just saying. No, this is a nicely penned piece by Frank. It was well composed, and you know, the wording in it. I don't know. God bless his who he is, because I'd never gotten through it. I'd been saying, "What is that word?" That'd be me. How do I say that? You know, that kind of a thing. But it was a story well told, and I think Frank is feeding us bit by bit the pieces to this, I don't know if you call it a saga, but, you know, his anthology of Saxon poems. So I think this is like the third one he's given us. So it makes me wonder if he's going to give them to us one at a time, which is fine. I like it. But, yeah, I think that it was a fine piece with lots of wording that fit the period of time he was writing for. And yeah, it was a great tale told. So thanks, Frank, for sharing with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, you got to read it. How about you? What do you think?
I got to try to read it. You're right. But good Lord, you know, that poem really wanted someone who knew how to pronounce those words and was familiar with that language. To me, it was a lot of nonsense words. I had no idea what a lot of those meant. I couldn't even extract it from the context. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you had a warlock who was a little jealous of the fact that the maidens bathed and lathered with the elves and dwarves and not him. And there was a big fight, a big brouhaha about the whole thing. Now, obviously, that's not it. I got to take this kind of poetry seriously, but I'm all adrift on this one.
I think the hardest part about this write, I'm sorry, Rex, I didn't mean to interrupt, but
no,
I think the hardest part is reading it and trying to get through the words at the bottom, trying to piecemeal what it's saying. It's definitely not something that you can just do off the cuff or, you know, just out of the blue, because you have to really put it together.
No, Rex can do that shit. He can do that crap. I know it.
Okay, Rex, do it.
I like the old languages, but that opening stanza was the kind of one that hit me for it. A yearly yule before the fourth will be tided upon a full moon as the Saxons gathered at the sith where Yost the many worship and the maidens that wedded an acorn. There's a gathering, yearly tradition, and everything from then on down kind of hits on that idea of why this tradition is and the gathering happens. They tell the tale of the warlock and how he tried to get into one of the maidens, and the story that outlined where she became the queen on the back end of this, and why they do celebrate. So this is one of those stories you tell around the big old campfire, huge gathering, mead, spirits, and meat aplenty, and you're feasting and drinking and telling the tale, so that it can be passed on from generation to generation and not be forgot, because this is part of their legend, their lore, and how they came to be. And it's a great piece. I like this one. It walks a different, almost an enchanting tale of a beginning of a set of people because of what happened all those many years before. I like this. Nicely done, Frank.
All right. Okay. Well, for my next magic trick, I put a piece here called Woolen Air by A.R. Mundell, and I'm going to give this one a read.
It better be as complex as the one you just gave me.
Sure. Sure.
You know, I think it better be more than six lines.
It was more than six lines. I got that part done. This is called Woolen Air by A.R. Munzel. Laying this room again, not sleeping, though my eyes are laden. Drinking in the charged night air through the doorways in my pores. Too cold for bear, too hot for covers. Damp in body, breath, and hair. Moisture seeps and drowns the sheep, each counted to its end. End poem.
Great read, Jean. And you got that pretty much right, Laurent. Not six, but 12. So you
hit
the right angle.
I doubled it. I doubled
it. She doubled.
Oh, the trouble. It bubbles. Oh, I like this. You know what? This kind of had me thinking, especially with the last two, too cold for bear, too hot for covers, damp in body, breath and hair, moisture seeps and drowns the sheep, each counted to its end. That had me thinking of going through the changes. I forget what women call it. The midlife angle. When everything seems to be on fire all the time and you can't go without the covers. You can't stand not having the covers yet. It's all a mishmash. And God help me have this end now because you're not getting any sleep. What about you?
What are you talking about?
Oh, okay.
Actually, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been on fire since I was born. Anyway, go ahead, Laurent. Give him a comment.
Oh, well, there's that firewoman angle again.
That's right.
Well, I love the title, Woolen Air. My mother used to make my clothes when I was a kid, and she loved wool, and she didn't line clothing either. So every sweater I had that was wool was unlined. You ever worn a wool sweater that was unlined like that? It's no fun. And I take the lines that you just quoted, Rex, too cold for bear, too hot for covers, dampened body, breath and hair, a moisture seeps and drowns the sheep, each counted to its end. When you're in that kind of humid environment, it can be so difficult to sleep. And that comes across loud and clear, and that's a great present.
Excellent. All right, Firewoman, what about you?
Oh, my God. No, I thought this was just a nicely spent piece by Amy. You know, it's just, you know, to me it's just about trouble sleeping, too hot, too cold, just whatever. It just keeps you up at night, you know, and moisture seeps and drowns the sheep, each counted to its end. You have trouble sleeping, you're counting sheep. You know, and I've had those nights where it's too hot, it's too cold, you know, there's no happy medium to it. And I just figure it's life. I didn't think anything more about it. But, yeah, I think it was just well expressed. Woolen Air, I'm not sure I get that, but that's okay. Because that's the way it is, you know, it just, that's me. But I think it was nicely done. So, Amy, I think you did a fine job with this, and thanks for sharing very much. Mm-hmm. Okay, wise guy. Mm-hmm. Was that the last one to comment?
Yes, she was.
Sorry, you're usually the last one. So I'm sitting here waiting for you to finish. And you haven't even started yet. Okie doke.
Then maybe I should do it. I Dig a Pygmy by Charles Fortier in the Death Age. Phase one in which Doris gets that oath.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, there's a next piece to put up now. Oh, my God. I should know better. I can't lose my place with you guys. You just twist me up and get me all confused. I don't have far to go. This piece is called Shadowed by Robert M., and I have an audio for this, too. So here we go.
This is my recital of Shadowed. deep within this fragile mind, where despairs have dwelt and dined, tender notions must unwind to prepare for what to come. Aspirations that were led blind awaken in the ruins behind, the temple where the heart's confined, as it beats a lowly hum. The feeble heart has been maimed, baptized in doubt and shamed. Eternally it will be blamed for its cries that went unheard. Those dreams that will go unnamed left this temple warped, defamed. The dark within cannot be tamed by the creed of a single word. Hissing darkness readies claws, circling prey with gaping maws, preparing to ravage the flaws of the soul that is lain bare. In the raven's wicked cause rest the morbid, solemn clause, granting my pain a minor pause, if I were to simply not care. So now I sit, numb and cold, lamenting of the soul I sold. Regret takes its spiteful hold of another soul to damn. Spirits twist to hymns of old, dark destinies now unfold. Shadowed whispers remain untold, for a shadow is all that I am.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for the SoundCloud. Very much appreciate it. All right, Jean, what do you think?
You know, I like this piece. There's just the right amount of darkness to it. And it has that hint of the raven in it. You know, it's not 100% on the money, but it's close enough that you get it. You know, in the raven's wicked cause rests the morbid, solemn clause, granting my pain a minor pause, if I were to simply not care. So now I sit numb and cold, lamenting of the soul I sold. Regret takes its spiteful hold of another soul to damn. Spirits, the hymns of old, dark destinies now unfold. Shadowed whispers remain untold, for a shadow is all that I am. I don't know. I think that it's a great piece by Robert. I think it was well expressed all the way throughout. I mean, I could have probably picked up those stanzas all the way up to the top and, you know, gone down, you know, but I'm not copying the whole thing. I've only done that like a couple times in my life. Once was last week. I think Naomi's still laughing, but it's just wonderfully written. And, you know, Robert has a great way with the darkness, and I think this is no exception to that. I mean, he definitely just knows how to bring it, and he knows how to, you know, open it up to everyone, and they get it. You know, they just get it. So excellent work, Robert, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. I really enjoyed this piece. It's a nice work.
All right. Thank you, Dean. And Laurent, how about you?
Here's your pizza. Yeah, you got to me just in time. Morpheus was flirting with me. Robert's poetry is a little like a black hole. No light ever escapes it. There's a darkness in his writing that is consistent. And certainly this one runs along that course. The tender notions must unwind to prepare for what's to come, the harbinger of the darkness that is about to come. And aspirations that were led blind awaken in the ruins behind, the temple where the heart's confined, that beats a lowly hum. You've got somebody who sold his soul and is now paying the price. And all that's left of him is a shadow, as he says in the last line, for a shadow is all that I am. And yeah, this is, I think, more than a little hint of the raven in this, because that occupies at least two, maybe three stanzas. The raven's wicked cause, that's right there. No, so he taps into several influences, certainly Poe, but it's his own style and his own unique right. as typically true. Very, very well done.
Excellent. Thank you. And you're right, Laurent, that it's those single lines that drew me because they offer up the poem within the poem to prepare for what's to come as it beats a lowly hum for its cries that went unheard by the creed of a single word of the soul that is laying there. If I were to simply not care of another soul to damn, for a shadow is all that I am. That's just been careful planning and outlining to roll into that note of making sure those single lines double up and rhyme all the way through with everything else he rolls in with. So nicely done, Robert. Thank you.
Amen. Amen.
We're back on you.
Okay. Well, Laurent, I got a message here from Frank in response to my...
Uh-oh.
Yes, he says he's listening to the show, and he says, tell Laurent he did a good read. So he just wants to make sure.
I enjoy being stroked by Frank. He's very good at it.
There you go. Okay. Well, Rex, I'm going to put this next one up for you.
Okay.
And this is called Wednesday Night by Liquid Mind Forever.
Aha. Uh-huh. Wednesday Night by Liquid Mind Forever. Climbing up above his open shirt's bottom button, she comes to rest upon his chest where a large golden eagle hangs. Suspended in between his two chubby caramel nipples on a thick golden chain, each hard and molded like a classic Chevy. She sits cross-legged in black fishnet stockings, legs hidden behind the cabaret cocktail table's slender metal pole. Her elbows support her jaw and head as she licks her moist, sauternes lips, her eyes rubbing over his thighs, seductively open as he moves to the undulating sounds of his voice, recording, singing, unchained melody. Her favorite rendition, even more so than the Righteous Brothers, she feels sweat begin to trickle down from her knees, seeping out from the reticulated holes, and she squirms on her small, round cocktail seat, perfectly fit to her. Her locks of Titian curls sweep back with a toss of her head, not taking her eyes from his open mouth and pursed, teasing lips. She knows she'll soon come up for air, and when he pushes the cold, steely microphone back, away from his mouth, pauses and looks straight into her eyes and says, I'll be right back after a short break. Don't go away. And boom. All right, Gene, this one's all yours.
Not all mine. But, you know,
well,
I thought it was a nice...
You were a firewoman.
I was who? Oh, no, you said I was firewoman. You said, not I.
But you
but
said
anyway.
You was fire since the day you was born. Uh-huh.
I said, oh, yeah. I said I was hot since the day I was born. Be nice. Anyway, this was a great piece by Deborah. She wrote this for last Wednesday. You know, it was very... it had great imagery and a lot of detail. And it was a story that was well penned. It was like that clip of time. You know, it wasn't a moment in time, but it was a short period of time that was just elaborated on. But, you know, I liked where she started off here, climbing up above his open shirt's bottom button. She comes to rest upon his chest where a large golden eagle hangs. Suspended in between his two chubby caramel nipples on a thick gold chain, each hard and molded like a classic Chevy. That kind of made me laugh, you know, the classic Chevy. But it was well done. And, you know, I liked the rest of the story as well. And, it, you know, it was a good piece and a good story told. So creative and well done. Thank you very much, Deborah, for writing for us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, Deborah takes great care with the details to paint a picture that is highly textured. There's very little that isn't a descriptive word about the moments, the black fishnet stockings, legs hidden behind the cabaret, cocktail table, slender metal pole. I mean, everything all the way through is just descriptive words. And she paints a picture that, as I said before, is very textured and easy to see in the mind's eye, and certainly filled with the proper amount of passion for a Wednesday night.
Absolutely, you're right. To do a proper noir scene, you've got to paint it in such a manner that you can actually visualize as if you're watching that black and white old movie reel in front of you and notating all those little details that sit within that. If you don't notice then right there, you kind of miss because they're important down somewhere later in the film itself. And this kind of walks on that level, especially when you get right to that last line. I'll be right back after a short break. Don't go away. As if she's going anywhere in the moment except to wait to see what comes back on next. So nicely done there, Liquid. Thank you very much. Well, what, Gene? We're back on.
Hang on 1 second.
No.
Yes. Okay. Let me see now. Okay. Well, okay. Laurent, I have one for you. This one's by Neutron Bomb. So, here we go, and whenever you are ready.
All right. It's called a Hallelujah. Torrential rain arrives with the clockwork cogs of a monsoonal deluge. A river of expectation wails, I, in withered recompense. Rivulets of maca tea choked her breath beneath muslin shrouds. It's hard to breathe with the weight of societal expectation gripping her throat with index and forefingers. Identity is an arduous idiom wrapped in a Delphic riddle, which we flock to like bin chickens that are overcome with mange and fleas, symbiotically feeding off plasma for the showreel to shine amongst the disheveled masses. Matted bed hair trumps the allure of bedroom eyes, the slink of sateen sheets that have worn thin from overuse, held together by sweat and the excrement that slicks the pillow down feathers. And we choke down the next acerbic pill, choking on the next atrocity, forgetting the past, the lost, singing hallelujahs, all while shitting on the sovereignty of humankind's war with itself. She chooses her battalion of the war-weary, clasps stained mail to her chest, her war cry a call for attention from those that bury their heads under the same stars that pucker our existence around the globe. End poem.
Great reading, Ron. Thank you very much. All right, Jean. Ha. This one's all on you.
You keep saying that. It's not really all on me.
Why not?
You know, I think this... Because, you know, first off, I'm not that articulate with it. Second of all, you know, I mean, you guys are still going to comment after me. Wow. Anyway, I think this is a great piece by Neutron. Very well written. And... very full of great, it's very full of, listen to me, it's full of great imagery and wonderful details throughout. Rivulets of matcha tea choked her, breath beneath muslin shrouds. It's hard to breathe with the weight of societal expectation gripping her throat with index and forefingers. Identity is an arduous idiom wrapped in the Delphic riddle, which we flock to like bin chickens that are overcome with mange and fleas, symbiotically feeding off plasma to the showreel to shine amongst the disheveled masses. I mean, I think it's a great piece. And I think my understanding was this was written for Laurent's show the other night. So he probably has a whole different take on this. But wonderfully written and a great detailed piece. So thank you so much, Neutron, for sharing with us tonight. I appreciate that very much.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. And Laurent, I guess this was for you, huh?
Well, this is written on the prompt 11. In the wind of the mind rises the turbulence called I. It breaks down shower the barren thought. All life is choked. A lot of people wrote to the turbulence called I. And this is a poem that talks about certain horrible things. The world right now is experiencing heat and cold, dry and wet. And this begins with torrential rain arrives, the clockwork cogs of a monsoonal deluge, phrasing I really like. A river of expectation. It's not just a real river, but a river of expectation as well. And it translates into societal expectations and the effect it has on people and on identity. The stanza that talks about the bin chickens that are overcome with mange and fleas symbiotically feeding off plasma is a great take on, I think, the difficulty that we have in the world today to feed everyone properly. I hadn't had a chance to read this until just now, so I'm a little lost trying to ascertain exactly what we have here. It expresses the necessity to swallow something distasteful and waiting for the next silly thing that happens, the next dreadful thing that happens. You know, between stupidity and calamity these days, you don't know where to turn. And I'm referring to, and we choke down the next acerbic pill, choking on the next atrocity, forgetting the past, the lost singing hallelujahs, also while shitting on the sovereignty of humankind's war with itself. Yeah, humankind is at war with itself. Always has been, and it seems more and more so these days. She's given us a turbulence and a single voice and showered us with her thoughts and done a rather good job with it.
Absolutely, she did that. That one stance you did in the with the bin chickens and the showreel. I like that. That was quite... there's a dry wit in there because it does paint that notion of, oh, that showreel, let's put this person out here as this for the masses to feed upon. Nobody crawls around as they are bin chickens to peck and feed on that notion because you get your just due in clicks and supposed power as to what you're representing, what you're flocking to. And then that's for we're choking down the next assertive pill. Again, not just the warring and all that, but it's the next tidbit of what is supposed to be lucid thought being rammed down our throats and choking on the next atrocity, forgetting the past, the idea of negating that which is reality in order to make sure that the supposed reality that is being thrust upon us is the real angle of things, as opposed to the thought of, you know what, maybe you ought to take a step back and actually use your brains instead of being strode to the water to feed like that camel who spits in your face and tells you, I ain't going there. So I do like this.
Yeah.
Nicely done, Neutron.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay, Rex, I have this next piece for you. And this is called This Means Nothing to Me by The Sea. So, whenever you're ready.
This Means Nothing to Me by The Sea. It is cold outside. It's cold in my heart. My thoughts turn to images of you. They comfort yet chill me even further. The memories we shared in our brief time together, now tinged with uncertainty, like photographs faded in time, their sepia-tinted edges curling into the sun. One of life's tragedies, when once joyful recollections bring us more pain than happiness. The last words we spoke before you seemingly vanished into the night, like a cloud of mist on the morning air, haunt my waking hours as well as my dreams. Where you are now, I know not. I measure life in units of time, before and after you. I know that I must return to before, to the time when your face was not all I seek in the streets, as I trawl the freezing city by night, in hopes of a glimpse of your eyes. Alone in the dark, I know this must end. I know that in time, all this will be just a memory, like tears in the ocean, just mental images of us that I can look back on and say, this means nothing to me. Until then, I'll forget the touch of your hand on my face. It means nothing to me. The warmth of your embrace, it means nothing to me. The yearning that remains in your wake, it means nothing to me. This means nothing to me. And poem. All right, Laurent, let's start with you, please.
I was afraid you were going to say that. Give me 1 second to get oriented here. Can you come right back to me, please?
Sure. No, I'll even go first. Why not? I like this. The expression of the voice on the back end rolling through the notes of this means nothing to you, that is almost like a mantra to finish off, because you need that angle considering the cruelty and the harshness of what's up front. It is cold outside. It's cold in my heart. My thoughts turn to images of you. They comfort yet chill me even further. And then rolling through the machinations that led to the bottom angle of this. The photograph fade in time, set the attended edges curling into the sun. And one of life's tragedies, when once joyful recollections bring us more pain than happiness. And the last words, what the wonderment of where you are, then the realization alone, pondering on those thoughts themselves, and then that note of coming to the finality of things. Until then, I'll forget the touch of your hand on my face. It means nothing to me. The warmth of your embrace, it means nothing to me. The yearning that remains in me wake, it means nothing to me. And then the final note, this means nothing to me, was a nice touch to a set piece for the end of that mantra. This means nothing to me. It's just an easy thought of pushing past the enigma of what happened to make sure that you don't fall within that tethered world and lay waste to yourself because of the wonder. So, nicely done, Steve. All right, Jean, how about you?
You know, I thought this piece was nicely penned. You know, trying to forget a love gone wrong. If only that could happen, you know what I mean? I thought there were nice lines throughout. And where you are now, I know not. I measure life in units of time before and after you. I know that I must return to before. You know, if only you could erase that and make it all go away, it would work, you know. But this is more, to me, when I read this, is more like he's trying to convince himself that, yes, this means nothing to me. It never existed. It didn't happen. It's not real. It, you know, it's over. It's done, you know, and those feelings don't exist. And, you know, that last stanza and the ending line, you know, until then, I'll forget the touch of your hand on my face. It means nothing to me. That's where, because of the repetition, what makes me think he's trying to convince himself. But it was well penned. So great job, and thank you for sharing the sea, and nice work.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Jean. All right, Noron, we're back to you.
Yeah, the repetitive phrase, really, that Gene was just talking about, I agree, he's trying to convince himself. I mean, Shakespeare said it. He thinks he doth protest too much, does it too often, too meaningfully. And so he's trying to convince himself. I like the piece. It had a certain, I don't know, je ne sais quoi about it. I know that I must return to before, to the time when your face is not all I seek in the sleep as I fall the pleasing city by night, in hopes of a glimpse of your eyes. Trawling the freezing city by night, he's looking for her or someone like her, who knows. But again, he's convincing himself.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right, Jane, the bus comes back to you.
Of course. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Ghosts and Ravens, and that's by Pam Ray, and I have an audio for that. So here we go. Hold up. Wow. Okay. I have two that both say ghosts and ravens, so I got myself all screwed up. Here we go.
Ghosts and ravens. In shadowy forests dark and deep, while people toss in fretful sleep, ghosts and ravens start to creep. Spirits lost begin to weep. The trees release those cryptic cries to moonlit darkness of the skies. The midnight angel soars and flies to catch marauders in their lies. The wood has many secrets left of those who wander quite bereft. Souls confined with mystic theft, while lips they plead for final breath. Knots within the mind and heart rip sanity in broken parts, flesh pulled on oxen carts is the reaper's gathered art. Eventually, red sun awakens to reveal all that is forsaken, and people from their slumber shaken remember not the paths they've taken. But ghosts and ravens are always near. Into windows phantoms peer. Hours counted with great care. Till once again rise whispered fears. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Thank you, SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Jean. I think we'll come your way.
Yeah, I think that Pam did an excellent job with this. I love her rhyme and meter throughout. And I like the tale she's telling throughout. In shadowy forest dark and deep, while people toss in fretful sleep, ghosts and ravens start to creep. Spirits lost begin to weep. The trees release those cryptic cries to moonlit darkness and of the skies. The midnight angel soars and flies to catch marauders in their lies. I think she did just a fabulous job with this. I love the sway of the piece, you know, the sway of the sound in my ears. You know, it's like a swing, you know, swinging in the breeze. It just goes back and forth, and that's the way it plays on my mind. And I love that. I really do. That's what I like about rhyme is I love how I hear it in my ears. But definitely a wonderful piece. I think that she's, I don't know, she touched on something. I'm not exactly sure what this was written for, but definitely a fabulous write, and very very well done. I like the imagery, and I like the, as I said, the rhyme. So great piece, Bam. Well done.
Thank you, Jean. Laurent, how about you?
Are we on This Means Nothing to Me?
No, we're on Pam's piece.
Ghosts and Ravens.
That's right. Yeah, I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. I just didn't turn the page. Oh, I love the image, by the way. She chooses a nice imagery. I like Pam's tone in this poem. The trees release those cryptic cries, the moonlit darkness of the skies. The midnight angel soars and flies to catch marauders in their lies. She's using a rhyme scheme that is all A-A-A-A-B-B-B-B. and et cetera, which ties it together rather nicely. Phrasing is enthusiastically wonderful in this. Knocks within the mind and heart, rips sanity in broken parts, flesh pulled on oxen carts, is the reaper's gathered art. Ghosts and Ravens is a nice title. There's a certain amount of darkness here, but not a lot. The ending stanza implies a certain mysticism, with the ghosts and the ravens always near. Into windows, phantoms peer. God, I hope not. Hours counted with great care till once again rise whispered tears. Interestingly, delightfully dark.
All right. Thank you, Laura. Concerning that open stanza, she does hit on the idea of sleep and the dreams that come. So talk about that which crawls into the mind during your sleeping hours, those fears that haunt us. And she rolls into the trees, leaves those cryptid cries to moonlit darkness of the skies, the midnight angel soars and flies to catch marauders in their lies. A touch to a dream sequence, and then the woods of many secrets. Then the thought, knocks within the mind and heart, rips sanity in broken parts, fresh pulled on oxen carts, if the reapers gathered art. And that had me thinking of the note to the Black Death, bring us your dead, bring us your dead, as they're loading up the cart to be taken outside town.
Bring out your dad.
Yes. And then that second last stanza hits on the note to morning. Eventually, red sun awakens to reveal all that is forsaken, and people from their slumber shaken remember not the path they've taken. The idea of most people, you forget. Or you might remember part of the dream upon awakening, but it fades and then dissipates during the course of the day. And then that opening note at the bottom. But ghosts and ravens are always near, into windows phantoms peer, hours counted with great care. So once again, rise whispered fears. Again, that note of what digs within the crannies of our minds, to raise that note of fear and gets us to dreaming on the dark angles once more. So nicely done, Tim. All right, Jean, we're back on you.
Okay, Laurent, I have the next piece up for you. It's called Wandering with Intention. By Laurent Yvonne.
Oh, whatever you need. I know that piece.
Oh.
All right. Wandering with Intention. In bed, you, my love, stretched out and gleaming, freshly oiled body wearing only a beret, purchased on vacation at Pas-de-Calais. It suits me as it suits you, a crimson bit of attitude that lets you express yourself, talking through your hat without saying a word. I think you described it that way. Memory recalls you said it made you feel a little like Simone de Beauvoir, classy and stylish. A hat for strolling or reading as you drank in every word of the second sex. Your outrage was my delight as you took me, roughly, like an angry man takes a woman, straddling the object of your desire, taking an eon's frustrations out on me with a jungle ferocity. All I had to defend myself with were memories of Zola's Germinal. Poor ammunition for the moment. Perhaps I should have read the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn to balance out self-expression. Now, when the candle stub gutters, passionate shadows leaping across the skin of your contentment, your beret perched on your head to one side, asking me questions like, when are you finally going to start? Mashiach, don't ever remove that chapeau. I like the questions it asks, and I like wandering with intention. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I thought it was a tale well told, Laurent, and so much wonderful imagery. And I did like that very much about the piece when we read it the first time. Just It's filled, you know, you're talking about this hat, but you have so much else going on in here, you know, and you want to attribute it to the hat. And I find that to be kind of humorous, exactly. But well done. Well done. Great piece.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. This hat, attitude walking both ways, because you roll on her angle. In bed, you, my love, stretched out, gleaming. Freshly oiled body, wearing only a beret. Purchased on vacation a Pasek Alain. It suits me as it suits you, a crimson bit of attitude that lets you express yourself. Nice touch to introduction, especially with the picture you've got displayed. And the thought of your outrage was my delight as you took me roughly, like an angry man takes a woman. A little role reversal. Straddling the object of your desire, taking Eon's frustration down on me with a jungle frosting. And I like the thought when you dropped in here, perhaps I should have read the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn to balance out self-expression. The idea of dabbling north and south of the equator, so to speak, as the expressive attitude to where you were going with everything else that was going on. And then the candle stub gutters, nice touch to the end of the evening. Yes, the beret is still perched, but now it's to one side. That gleaming note from the outset has tempered itself to contentment, so to speak. Oh, yeah, you've got that in your contentment. And then that awkward question when you finally go into start. I thought that was funny. And then to finish out, my share. Don't remove that chapeau. I like the question to ask, and I like wandering your intention. So it's kind of a back to, all right, you ask the question, round two commences. Need you ask?
All right.
And back to you, Jean.
Okay, Rex, well, I'm coming back to you with this piece by Lockdown Larks, and it's called The Bane. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. The Bane by Lockdown Larks. During battle, as swords swing, in mists of time three witches sing, Thane of Cawdor and then King, shall this be solace that they bring? Instead of bane upon him is revealed, no kin descendants will he yield, another son to be the crown shield, and as such in his fate is sealed. Cawdor comes by a king's good grace, the prophecies he doth now embrace, his lady's ambition positions its place, plot to kill a king he must now face. So swiftly onward to this fateful deed, to drug king's bodyguard was agreed. A sleeping king knifed with all speed, frame, blame, and slain the only need. But what more hath witches to say? All born of women he will slay, until those of a wood come this way, then shall he see his last today. A wrath he executes with his powers, women and children's lives he devours. Across the land of darkest hours, his lady's suicide as sanity sours. From the wood there comes an army, the spirit of people must be set free, the wrong no longer bending knee, he fights viciously for his destiny. There was one, not from woman born, from a dying womb one had been torn, he sees clearly now, prophecy sworn, drops sword, accepting a fate forlorn. Say not the fruits of greed, nor the fantasy of a lover slain. The mist of time ensures all bleed. Love living and live loving the game. And boom. All right, Gene. This had a nice rolling ring to it.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. You know, I thought it was a clever piece. You know, he said this is on the topic board. It says, for those like me who cannot understand a word of Shakespeare's Macbeth, here's my take on it. I hope it helps. You know, so good for Lockdown Larks. But I think, you know, he did. What he wrote here, it flowed nicely. It had a great rhyme and meter to it. And it told the story. And I can't tell you that I know all about Macbeth, but he definitely told a story from beginning to end here. And I think he did a fine job with that. So great job, Larks. And I want to thank you for sharing with us. It was a great addition to the show tonight, and a good piece. Nicely done.
Thank you. How about you?
All around. Laurent, would you like to comment on that piece? Okay.
Maybe he fell asleep on it.
Oh, he left us.
Oh.
He's gone. He fell offline,
okay.
I guess.
All right. I did like this, even as much as he might not understand or comprehend the sort of Shakespeare, he did kind of work within that angle to play out his own thoughts, because he still hits on all the right notes in Mists of Time 3, which is sing, Thane of Cawdor, and then King, shall this be solace that they bring. He offers up the same notation of thought penned his way without the obviousness of language, but still kind of walking in that note. Offers up Bane, kin descendants, the crown shield, death, and he even drops in a couple of words, death now embrace, giving a little bit of oomph to the point he's pushing across. Then faithful deed. So he walks very much in without getting too deliberately into the language of Shakespeare itself, but still walks in that note while offering up his own thoughts, which is clever. That's not an easy thing to do while still keeping the same notes and pace.
Absolutely. Okie doke. Well, I guess I'll put up our last one. And this piece is by Jack Tomkovic. This is called Plains That Land. And I'll give it a read. It's short and sweet. Plains That Land by Jack Tomkovic. MSNBC's Chris Hayes hit it out of the park when he said, a journalist, we don't cover Plains That Land. No, Chris, you don't. And Jesus weeps. And just some words about media violence. If it bleeds, it leads. Jesus, Mary, and Joe. Okay, so that's that.
I like the sardonic bite in that. Because he's implying the note that, hey, you know what? That is that if it bleeds, it leads. That's been their paramount note to garnering the most reads, so to speak, for God knows 70 years now. And they've forgotten the art of actually telling the truth, telling the story, and informing the public. No, it's got to be a narrative, and it's got to walk a singularity. So there's a nice satirical note to that note of, no, Chris, you don't. And the thought of, and Jesus weeps, the idea of, yeah, maybe if we did offer up a bit of truth, we'd all be a lot happier.
Maybe. Sometimes you have to offer up something more than just the doom and the gloom of it all. That's what I say. But,
yeah. And that clever note of they wanted to make the bleed go a little further by, hey, we're coming to World War, and we want it to happen. What's next? Is it Taiwan? Yes, it will be. But they start off with it a few months ahead of schedule, so by the time you get to it, you're already prepped and ready for it. But meanwhile, none of it makes any sense anyway.
Yeah. I hear you, man. I hear you. But that was a great piece, Jack, and thanks for sharing with us. Well penned and expressed, and thanks for the share, man. Nice job. So, it's 11:54. Let me look at something.
Well, here, why can't witches get pregnant?
I don't know.
Because warlocks have Halloweenies.
Oh, God. You got gonged on that one. Good Lord.
Come on, that's an old dad joke from years gone past.
I'll tell you what. I have a piece that has an audio that is 3 minutes and 31 seconds long. I think we can do
perfect.
It.
Oh, perfect. Yeah.
Okay, let me copy that up. Put it on the board. If I can find the damn board. God, okay. And this is Arcana and Selena. So here we go.
As ocean waves surge distant shores in floods of rolling, systematic surrender, each dutifully ensuing the wake of another, succumbing to calls for obedient compliance.
Across arid terrain, traverse weary treads, each leaden step aligned in conflicting camaraderie, through a nebulous nightmare of a bleak, boundless voyage, where each sigh is swallowed by the wandering wind.
Such is the journey of hordes that follow, marching along paths meandering to obscurity, among heaving tides of submissive shadows, destined to forever submerge in the crowd. Blindly marching in regimented rows, they move as automatons to silent heartbeats, manipulated like puppets by unseen strings, dancing in unison to a wearisome waltz.
Somewhere inside, a voice of freedom calls out to break free these invisible chains that bind, taunting fragmented dreams and ailing aspirations which these restless souls relentlessly repine. Battalions trapped in grey stone prisons, impassionately sensing a break in ranks, as from crumbling edifices of past existence emerges the last dying breath of human spirit.
Screaming defiance to engulfing masses, escaping from the mundane, monotonous dirge, carving a new course towards unseen horizons, to witness clear skies where freedom flies.
Great read, Arcana and Selena. Thank you to SoundCloud, and very much appreciate it. This kind of reminds me of two movies, The Island and THX-1138, The Island being in order to get to where the highest point of this civilization, you have to go through the lottery system, and you follow into it like lambs to the slaughter, so to speak. And part of that is that note to slaughter. Just like THX-1138, your daily angle is driven by work and the pills you take to keep you alive and going and sleeping, until you break from those notes and you find there's still a touch of defiance and spirit in the soul that allows you to break free from those moments and move into a world where you want to be rather than those who bind you to the one that you're in. So nicely done. All right, Jean, how about you?
Well, it's a wonderful piece. I love the alliteration. I love the story. You know, I love the audio. There's a whole lot about it that I really did enjoy. And it was a great piece. With that, I think I have about 5 seconds. Oh, we're out of time. Well, thank you, Rex, for co-hosting with me. Laurent, thanks for calling in and hanging out with us 99% of the night. Thank you to everyone who contributed poetry to us. Always enjoy. Yes. I have a few carryovers, not many, and they'll be on next Friday's show. So anyone who has any questions, feel free to ask me or check out our board. Rex, hope you have a great week. Oh, no, I'll see you too. I'll see you on Sunday. Have a great week. I'll talk to you later.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, son. Have a good night. Okay. Night, everybody. Good night.